Well, Carol, I don't know if we're going to get the publicity. I hope not, but going to put the 501c3 in peril today on a nonpartisan basis. It was interesting some years ago. Fullerton used to have clergy come in and do invocations. And then some clergy person came in to do an invocation for a city council meeting and actually said something. And that horrified the city council. And so they put guidelines, and the clergy shouldn't say anything that might have anything to do with how we lead our lives or social justice or anything like that. And I kind of found the irony in that, giving guidelines to Moses not to talk about how to live together, Jesus not to talk about the poor. Come on. It is so hard not to be involved in the great issues of our day and the issues of every day. Memorial Day is too often trivialized as a nice time to have special sales and to watch men and an occasional woman roar around the track at Indianapolis 500, putting their lives in danger, and to forget what it is about. It's about war. It's about sacrifice, and it's about memory. And most of us do a pretty good job of honoring the service of people who have defended our nation. We honor the lives, and we honor the deaths, and the sacrifices of those who left their lives on foreign fields. We also honor the lives of those who left parts of their bodies and of their souls in foreign lands. I particularly honor Uncle Greg, who is Sean's uncle also, who after fighting in World War II spent 6 months in England basically unconscious and drunk and in a bathtub. And it took him years for his soul to heal. And it never, of course, healed completely. I honor my friend Mike when I was living in North Africa. My house was the unofficial R&R spot for the Marine Embassy Guards. And these kids who had gone to Vietnam as teenagers. And my friend Mike, who had lied about his age and gone into battle at 17, had the tontine. The tontine is the survivor's prize from his squadron. He was the last man left alive. And every night he woke up screaming. We pay a tremendous price. And sometimes it's a price that has to be paid. We remember, we appreciate the service. But the question, and it's the question that Pasternak brought up in what became a song from And Quiet Flows the Dawn, when will we ever learn? When will we ever learn about the true costs of war? Or about what war is? One of the things that has amazed me as I've tried to write about reality and think about reality and cover the news and try to bring some kind of order out of the chaos is whatever you think of all of our many individual conflicts, military conflicts that we're involved in, where's the peace movement? I don't even hear the conversation. I'm not telling all of you to join it, but the absence of conversation is deafening. There was Imagine played before the service, and I kind of was magical thinking. I wished it into being. We're not talking about these things. Maybe it's because we don't know what war is anymore. We have not fought a legal war since World War II. There's been no congressional declaration of war since World War II. So all of the people that went off to Korea and Vietnam and Haiti and Nicaragua and Panama and Iraq twice and Afghanistan and are off the coast of Libya. They're not fighting wars. What happened to the voice of the people? What happened to the voice of the Congress? What happened to issues of responsibility and accountability? Because how do we talk about what we don't understand? And I am being bipartisan in this. The issue about whether our current president needs to go to Congress after 60 days of casually bombing and droning in Libya seems to be unsettled law, with some people saying, well, he really should ask Congress, and other people say, well, it's de minimis. You know, they're just a couple of drones, and we really only bombed for a week or 10 days, and it's really NATO, and so forth. This is bipartisan. This is a bipartisan, dishonest handling of how we choose to put ourselves, our country, and other countries in the line of fire. And the costs are tremendous financially, psychologically, and I think constitutionally, because we have basically abdicated responsibility for the foreign policy when it gets militarized in our country. It is not that we don't have enemies. We do. It is not that there are not people who want to kill us. There are. I am not making an argument at this point for absolute pacifism, though I respect such arguments. I'm making an argument for principled conversation and responsible engagement, which I just don't see us doing. All of you know the statistic. Our annual defense budget, as far as we know it, is more than the sum of every other nation in the world. The most destructive attack on our nation was carried out by box cutters. And we can't kill dead, to stay dead, a second jet engine that the Pentagon doesn't want. LA Times today talks about what good news military supplying and resupplying is to California. We all have an economic dog in the fight because of the defense industry, and I'm not arguing with any of your jobs who are involved in the defense industry, but wouldn't it be nice if we could build it on or use that money on bridges and roads and infrastructure and education? This is the defense industry that Eisenhower warned about. The military-industrial complex is the tail, the big, mighty Tyrannosaurus Rex tail that wags the dog. And that defense contracts have been put into every state and parts into virtually every district, if not literally every district. So we have an economic dog literally in the fight. But at what cost? At what cost when our social safety net is being shredded? At what cost when Congress and all the political parties are looking, as they should, at issues of deficit and national debt, but we can't talk about defense because that would be un-American? What an irony it would be if the Republicans became the peace party, because there is, in fact, more questioning of Afghanistan on the Republican side than on the Democratic side, because the Democrats are afraid not to look tough on defense, because Democrats need to be manly men. It's out of proportion with the threat. And there's a tremendous potential irony. JFK warned, I quoted Ike, I get to quote JFK. JFK warned that we could fight so hard to defend our way of life that we would constitutionally and economically lose our way of life, lose our way from our moral center. Obama, in his speech, talked about how our ideals cannot always be in line with our actions. Well, I kind of understand that, but it is a strategically and morally incoherent policy that we are following all around the world. Now, it's true that countries are different, and you need different techniques with different countries, but this is really incoherent, and you have to ask yourself if we are involved in Libya because they have oil and not involved in Syria because they don't, if we are involved in Egypt but not in Bahrain because we need to have our fifth fleet in Bahrain. I understand that our ideals and our actions cannot always be in alignment, but we're incoherent, and our budget is crazy. We have, aside from being more than every other country combined, we still have troops in Japan, in Korea, in Italy, in Germany. We have, obviously, troops in Afghanistan. We have black ops in Pakistan. We have black ops all over Latin America. And we have troops stationed in England, just in case those royalists become a threat to us again. What are we thinking? Where is this money going as our safety net is being shredded? As the most fundamental issues and rights and privileges that we thought were well earned are now being challenged, and we find out our economic problems have nothing to do with this huge defense budget. It has everything to do with you retired school teachers and librarians and all of the people who are on pensions are now the dole. And if you're on a pension, this is the new version of being welfare queens. This is craziness and out of proportion with our history and with our values. Now, I don't have easy answers. For easy answers, you have to go someplace where you tithe 10%. I just have a bunch of questions and an awful lot of, as the hymn says, fierce unrest stirring at the heart of my soul when I look at what is going on in our world. And our fear and our action and our reaction are out of proportion. We have been caught in a cycle of violence where our policy provokes attack, which provokes response, which provokes re-attacking and replans, and it is a destructive cycle. We go after with bombs and with drones and with planes, training camps and far-flung areas, and the people on the monkey bars are not the people who are threats to us, because you'll notice in Obama's talk he never mentioned Saudi Arabia, where the money comes from. So we don't even talk about the real stuff. We show pictures of guys on monkey bars who aren't coming here. And we send drones. And the Greeks had an awful lot of good myths, because those myths conveyed truths. And one of the great Greek myths is about the hydra-headed monster. You cut off the head of a hydra, and two more grow back. 2, 4, 6, 8. Who can we infuriate with our drones and with our bombs and with our overblown fears? Fears are based on reality, but the volume is up so high. And when you look at what we have accepted in the last 10 years in terms of changes in our way of life and assumptions about our privacy and assumptions about our personal dignity, I have to go back to the question of when will we learn? When will we ever learn? An image, a metaphor that I've used in the past is that of the saber-toothed tiger. The saber-toothed tiger, you may have noticed if you've been wandering around in our parks, is extinct. And the one of the reasons that it's extinct is that its sabers grew and grew and grew. And all of that energy, all of that food and energy went into those tusks, those sabers that defended it, until they became so large, so great, so heavy, that the saber-toothed tiger lost its speed, its flexibility. It could no longer wield its defensive weapon. And its defensive weapon led to its extinction. As we are making financial choices about what goes into our budget, what gets cut from our budget, what is a proper role of defense and defense spending, and there certainly is a proper role, because we do have enemies, we have to think about the saber-toothed tiger and understand that what we are doing and building and fearing can sow the seeds of the destruction of our own social safety net. I know that people want to talk about American exceptionalism, but we are the same DNA in human genome as every other people, nation, and tribe. And so when you look at what's happening in Greece, when their safety net is shredded from their bankruptcies not caused by defense industries, when you look at the riots of young people in France and just this week in Spain, do not believe that we are immune from that if we continue to close our libraries, cut off our social programs, put people who are ill onto the streets, affect our entire educational process in order to keep the munitions factories going. We have to find a balance. When will we ever learn the human costs of war? It's not enough to remember, to appreciate, and to celebrate. We have to actually take all of this information and try, not in absolutist ways of all or nothing, but in responsible ways, to cut a deal, an imperfect deal, between our ideals and our realities. We have to be able to talk about war and peace. It can't be unpatriotic to want to give peace a chance. It can't be unpatriotic to go to those military cemeteries and look at where all those flowers have gone, where those men and increasingly women have gone, where the injured and the wounded have gone, and the injured and wounded who are being injured and wounded in military conflicts abroad and in the shredding of our safety net at home. We are all in this together, and we need to have a principled discussion about how to understand our responsibilities for peace and how we in our hearts can try to give peace a chance and how we can talk to each other with generous spirits to try to understand the nature of threat and the appropriate level of response that is based at least partially on reason and not totally on fear. We do not have to be controlled by our fear. We need to be influenced by our generosity and our hope.